Hey everyone, this amazing ESO Network show is brought to you by our fine sponsor, Amazon.com. Please remember to shop Amazon for all your geeky needs, no matter what time of the year it is. All you need to do is go to ESOpodcast.com/ESOAmazon or click on the Amazon banner on the ESO Network webpage to go to our e-store. It's the best way to shop and the best way to support this program, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. Okay, that's enough of me babbling for now. Now on with your regular scheduled show.
Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
I'm Tony Heath.
And this is the Watchathon of Rassilon.
Maybe. No, it is. It is. It for sure is.
Today we're going to be talking about the third serial of the eighth season of Doctor Who, The Claws of Axos, which consists of four episodes that aired from March 13th, 1971 to April 3rd, 1971.
True facts!
And I want to give a special shout out to Matt Golden of mgoldentumbles.tumblr.com for getting us these episodes.
Hey, thanks, Matt.
And today we have a new special guest.
So special.
The specialist. I don't want to say the specialist. That'll make our previous guest feel bad.
Oh.
But you're the specialist.
They're all equal amounts special.
It's Brian Snape.
Oo-ar? Oo-ar? Oo-ar?
That's all he does is go oo-ar.
Hi, this is one of my favorite stories, Claws of Axos, because of Pigbin Josh, who is, what can I say, is the one of the most sympathetic characters in the world. But that's just me.
I don't remember him off the top of my head.
Oh, he's the tramp.
Oh!
Oh, he's the one with the delightful theme music.
Yeah. Do, 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 do. Which kind of has a Last of the Summer Wine taint to it.
You said taint. So tell us a little bit about yourself and about your experiences with Doctor Who.
Well, I'm a Libra, and I like cold weather and hockey. I've been a Doctor Who fan probably since I first saw it on my local PBS station, Channel 48, WCET in Cincinnati in 1985. Tom Baker, Robot, was my first Doctor Who story. It started what I would, I guess, would call a lifelong love for Doctor Who. It's given me many moments of happiness and satisfaction, and it has made my breath fresh and my dating quite non-existent. So... but no, seriously, I am, I've been a huge fan most of my life, and, a lot of, what I am into is, you know, obviously the main series itself, but also I am a big fan of, like, the books, you know, the Virgin New Adventures, the BBC books, the Missing Adventures, Past Doctor Adventures, all sorts of the adventures. I'm really big into Big Finish. I always like Big Finish because it's like they had been gatekeepers for Doctor Who during what we call the Autumn Years or the Dark Years or the Wilderness Years. I can't remember. So yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it. Comics, Doctor Who games and stuff, and there you go.
So you've seen all of Classic Who?
I have seen, I would have to say about 90%. I've seen all the broadcast episodes, the missing ones. I've seen a few reconstructions. I am not a fan of Marco Polo, so any Marco Polo fans out there, sorry.
Oh, I'm a Marco Polo fan.
Right here.
To Ghana.
Sorry. I mean, don't trust them. They're evil. Episode 2, don't trust them. They're evil. Episode 3, don't trust them. They're evil. That's to Ghana to me in a nutshell, so.
But hammier.
and well, you know, more brown face on there, so.
I was unaware of that.
Yeah, yeah. It's the great tradition of hiring white actors for ethnic parts, so.
I was so glad they didn't do that last serial.
Yeah, we had a brief moment of like, I mean, thank you for not being overtly racist.
Oh, yeah, Chinle, yeah. Well, you know, I mean, she was an associate of the Master, so.
She turned into a
dragon. I mean, my standards are so low that I was just like, they didn't do Yellowface, hooray!
No, that's not until we get to the Talons of Wang Chiang.
Anyway, we should probably talk about Axos? Yeah, the claws of Axos.
Maybe.
Axos. Oh, is that what we're here for?
Yeah. Oh, I just want to also say that for those who don't know, I've known Brian for a long time from a website that was fans of Douglas Adams, the Douglas Adams Continuum.
Late lamented Douglas Adams Continuum. It's like Woodstock. If you weren't there, then you weren't there.
I might call him Gons a few times because his name on there was Gons. I might slip into that because it honestly feels weird calling you Brian.
Yeah, I understand that. I understand that.
Ray still calls me Alien on occasion, which I have not gone by in ages. Also, no one look that up, please.
I'm a huge Hunter S. Thompson fan, and actually Gonzo is also my favorite Muppet. I mean, the two don't really apply, but so, you know, I always have like a version of Gonz in my nickname. My Twitter handle is Gonzaro.
I put you in a movie that I made called Life with Death, and you were credited as Gonzo Lager, so.
Mm-hmm. Yep, it used to be Gonzo Lager. Those were good times. That was that was when you played the Green Bulge.
I will not explain that on this podcast.
No?
It was my knee. I swear it was my knee.
He said it was his knee, ladies and gentlemen.
I don't know, you should be proud.
Why did you have your knee that high?
Leverage.
Ah, there you go.
I was holding up a green screen.
Yes, the Green Bulge is not a Doctor Who story, so.
It would be the Green Bulge of Death.
The Deadly Bulge of Doom.
Actually, I think the first time I met Gons was when I was doing my first watch through of Classic Who, and I got stuck on the web planet.
And what did I tell you at the time?
You said, that it was terrible.
Well, I mean, yeah, but also that, you know, you don't feel like you need to know everything, you know, have to watch everything in the classic series. That's one of the things I really like about the new series is they've been really good about, you know, kind of easing stuff in so that you don't get overstimulated by the, you know, everything's like, oh, what's a TARDIS? Who's the Master? What are the Daleks? What is this? You know, whereas, you know, like with the Paul McGann movie, which aired 21 years ago this weekend, I guess, just threw a whole bunch of information at you in the first 5 seconds, you know, and you're just like, what the hell? So
mostly what I'm hearing is that Joe learned nothing because we're here watching them all in order.
I think by this time he's grown some. He's matured. He's gotten married.
I have watched New Who now.
And that was the thing. Yeah, you were like, I can't wait to watch. I can't watch New Who until I finish watching Old Who. And I'm like, dude, you don't have to do that.
Yeah.
That was an argument. Just watch the show with me. Like, no, I'm going to watch all of Classic Who first. That's ridiculous.
Well, I mean, if you're going to do that, and you should have read all the Virgin New Adventures, because, you know, and then all the Eighth Doctor novels, and then, you know.
Where does it end?
I do want to check those things out. I will. So let's...
Ooh, wait, the opening shot is great, because it's like a loaf of bread with a shrimp tail floating through space.
We're starting now?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think so.
Episode 1 of The Claws of Axos, which I have called The Call of Axos, or The Anus of Axos.
Oh. That's unfortunate.
When I first saw, you know, again, it was on my PBS, and at the time they had, you know, this was when a lot of the John Pertwee episodes were still kind of missing. And so, you know, stuff like Mind of Evil was in black and white. It was just kind of weird all of a sudden to kind of get this opening that, you know, if you look at it, it's kind of like the opening of Spearheads in Space, or Spearheads from Space. You know, and it starts with, you know, soldiers tracking an unknown object. But it was just kind of weird because it was like the first time I had seen a Doctor Who that was starting to look a little bit more like the stuff I had gotten into when I first saw Tom Baker. Just because when my PBS showed it, they went Baker, Davison, Colin Baker, and then went back and started with the first Doctor. It was like one of the first times that, you know, it started looking like the Doctor Who that I was more familiar with, as opposed to, you know, something that looked like Pertwee or you know, old stuff like that.
I do think the thing flying in space looks a bit, to me, you say it looks like a loaf of bread.
Yes.
I think it looks a little bit like a babelfish.
Oh.
At least from a distance.
It looks like something that would latch onto you and suck out every bit of life from you, which is appropriate because that's exactly what the Axos want to do, or the Axons, or whatever you want to call them.
I do like that you have Chin is looking through, that's his name, Mr. Chin, which I think is a great name. He's looking through these file folders, and they just have top secret written on them in magic marker, which is how I hope all top secret files are handled.
Well, it's like in that weird kind of 70s, you know, hand script or something like that. You know, it's like, you know, the fast return switch from Edge of Destruction. You know, it's written in Sharpie just for grins and stuff. I was like reading, you know, like kind of breathing through the Target novelization of that, and it's the bit where Chin's going through all the personnel files for unit, and in the book, the Brigadier is actually like fantasizing about, you know, putting Chin up against the wall and having him shot.
What? Jesus!
That's not how I thought that sentence was going to end.
I mean, it even gets to the point where, you know, the Brigadier is musing, you know, to himself, you know, blindfold, cigarette, brick wall. Yeah, it was weird. You know, I was writing the notes, and I'm like, Brigadier?
That's a little harsh. I mean, I know at least at this point, he's done some morally gray stuff, like killing the Silurians and all that. But this is a step too far.
One of the criticisms of the Barry Letts era is that it gets too family-oriented. Because, you know, just last season, you had Elizabeth Shaw. You had more grim stories. You kind of had that thing where UNIT wasn't exactly a force for good. You know, they were a pragmatic organization dedicated to, you know, just protecting your Earth no matter what the means. So, you know, you blow up the Silurians. So, you know, I guess in a way, I think it was Terrence Dix who wrote it, but he put that in, and I'm just like, wow.
I think maybe killing a human being is maybe a little too much.
But it's a bureaucrat, so it's okay.
It's someone who annoys us.
And someone who will continue to annoy us through the whole story.
I refer to him as Colonel Sanders' cousin, because he looks an awful lot like Colonel Sanders. But
there is
British.
One point, too, that he's eating fried chicken, and that just drove you nuts.
I know. I just went, he is literally eating fried chicken right now.
I gotta say, this invasion is finger-licking good, yes.
But, I call him Double Chin. He has one chin too many. Not that I can say much myself, but, you know, at least I have a beard to hide it.
And we had a chin from the previous serial, Chin Lee.
So he's the second chin.
Put them all together, there's three chins.
We get introduced to Bill.
Who is an American?
We think.
Oh, is he supposed to be?
Oh, can't you tell?
I have no idea.
Anyone who talks very like this is American.
Come on. Yeah. I mean, you know, Bill Filer kind of talks in that, you know, American voice that, you know, all British people do.
It reminds me of the captain of the starship, the Rocket, in Tomb of the Cybermen.
Oh, God, I loved him.
Let me tell you, Vic.
He's the one that, like, said just, like, weird shit. I want my skin to be tight on me, you know what I mean?
Well, come on, Vic, what are you doing? Why don't you go look over there, Bob? Okay, Jim.
It looks like you just blew yourself a pair of doors.
I had zero idea that he was supposed to be American.
Mission accomplished. Yeah, Paul Grist, I think, is the actor's name. I think he is Welsh. Yeah, continuing the long tradition of, you know, bad American accents. Which, you know, fair enough, we have bad British accents here in the U.S. when our actors try to do it, so.
Is he supposed to be, like, a specialist? His whole thing is he's gonna take down the master.
Yeah, he's supposed to be come gunning for the master, which, you know, that's adorable.
Which already made me really sad.
It's like, oh, you poor schmuck.
Honestly, he doesn't really have a good reason to be in this story.
I thought he was in the story because we weren't letting Joe be competent.
Yeah.
I feel like that's why he's in the story.
I feel like this is the first serial where Joe gets the
least to do.
Like, she's been sort of pushed aside before, but, like, this one is, like, very hardcore. She's not a part of
They're
it.
They're like,
that
oh,
much.
Man, we made Joe a lamp. We needed a character that's a companion that will actually do things. We'll bring Bill. That's what I feel like his role is.
Yeah, to take the part of the companion getting captured. Bill Filer serves no real purpose in this episode. He is just kind of there as another body. You could take him out and the story wouldn't miss him at all.
I barely remember anything he did. I just remember his, like,
he shows up
hair.
And he has very nice hair, that's true.
Nice? It's very 70s.
Yeah, Filer is just not vital to the episode whatsoever. You know, he is just there, I guess, as the way to kind of replace Joe. So yeah, Joe gets very little to do except scream and panic. I mean, she has that, like, one good scene where she kind of, where she stands up for herself when Chin places everybody under arrest. You know, and she kind of confronts Chin about it and, you know, lets off with this whole invective of, you know, basically standing up to him, which, you know, I thought good for her. But yeah, it's like, just wasn't it.
And also, the Doctor continues this theme of being rude to Joe.
Rude to Joe for no good reason, and you're supposed to be like, yeah, you tell her.
We're buddies.
No women on this mission.
You know, and unfortunately, that is something that, you know, even stretches back to, you know, William Hartnell days and, you know, Patrick Troughton, Tomb of the Cybermen, to go back to that story. You know, how many times Vicky goes, well, I'm going, and everybody's like, well, no, why don't you stay here here with Kat Dan or whatever her name is.
But I will say, I feel like in the case of Vicky, it's normally like Steven or somebody saying, no, no, stay, and less times the Doctor. Mm. I feel like this is the first time we've had the... And previous, if the Doctor has done it, it's like Susan, and you're like, well, you can forgive him for that.
And this is also an episode where you can see Katie Manning's underwear, so...
That happened!
Bonus for that, yeah.
I just turned to Joe and I was like, did you see that? He's like, yep. Yes, yeah. That for sure happened.
They're pink, because girls love pink.
I do not think that was intentional. I think there's like a brief second where she looks at the camera like, ooh, did...
Can we retake that? No, it's Doctor Who.
No, we're good. But most of the crew is going to need about 10 minutes. I'm sorry, is this that kind of podcast? Or...
No, you can.
It has been.
This isn't as bad as the Sausage Party episode.
Or Mind Robber, which was titled Sparkle Booty, so.
Boy, there's an acid trip for you.
Wait, did you say acid? Because I missed the id part.
And... I said acid trip.
Okay, I thought you said ass trip, which is also accurate.
Then you get the briefest shot of Gonza's favorite character. But it's so short that you're almost like, what just happened?
Yeah, I think we need to give Derek Ware his due as Pigbin Josh. He, within a handful of scenes, is able to create this character that you... Well, me at least. I mean, he's comical, obviously, because, you know, he kind of has that beautiful Dudley Simpson's Homeless Tramp music. Before we started talking, I likened it to, you know, kind of a seductive version of Last of the Summer Wines theme. I'm also into British TV, ladies and girls. Ladies and girls.
No one else.
No one else.
To heck with you, man. Yeah, it just, he's this kind of guy that just goes around. But yeah, my favorite thing is just, you know, the who are? You know, God bless him. The poor guy gets captured and then, you know, he is absorbed by the Axons and then just spit out and then, you know, dissolve.
It's terrifying.
They actually censor it because, you know, just as Mike Yates touches him, you know, he starts deflating, I guess.
It's the worst.
And they go to this kind of white flash, you know, to kind of transition to the next shot, which is, you know, Benton looking away or something like that. But yeah, they had actually filmed it because it's basically, you know, they're just letting the air out of a dummy. It's like a mold of Derek Ware's face. And, you know, it just kind of deflates, but it was considered too gruesome for a kid's show. So they ended up doing that, you know, that white flash, as we in TV call it, you know, to dissolve to the next, you know, cut.
I agree with that. It was much too scary.
Well, you know, Doctor Who is supposed to be scary sometimes.
We had a conversation about how I do not like the Autons, and I'm much more scared of them than anyone else has ever been.
That's because anything that's plastic could be an Auton.
And probably is.
Your computer is probably an Auton.
Uh-oh.
It's coming to get you and everyone you love.
I think that's probably true. Yes, the ship lands.
It lands, and most of it is embedded, very conveniently embedded underground.
So you don't have to see the whole thing. But its butt is just sticking out. The opening of the ship, that's the thing that is the anus of access. It looks
definitely
like
is very ass-like.
And then it opens up and shoots a penis tentacle out at you to eat you.
The whole thing's very suggestive.
The brown eye of access.
But I also want to say, when we first meet... Okay, also,
Pigbin Josh.
Where does that name come from? Is that in the credits, or...
Yeah.
Because he's not named at any point on screen, right?
No. And you know what is really interesting is later in, I think it's like an episode or two later, there's a picture of Pigbin Josh, you know, laying on the ground that Mike Yates is holding. And it's like, wait a second, how'd they get a picture of Pigbin Josh if he disintegrated as soon as, you know, Mike touched him? Ooh, inconsistencies.
When we first meet him, it's sunny and it's a nice day. And
when we see him next
time,
it's snowing.
It's snowing. There's a line about... the ship has messed with the weather, so it's snowing now. But it was mostly because it started snowing when they were filming, and they had to write that line in.
Inclement weather in Britain? What? But it lends to some nice atmospheric elements to it as well. And for all of its lookings like, you know, an anus or whatever, the Axon ship design is really kind of nice because, you know, it is supposed to be an organic vessel. It's, you know, it wasn't built, it was grown.
Oh, it was so gross, and it was amazing. I love organic ships. The set that they had for this ship was so great. And, like, the weird-ass, like, video overlays they had going on and, like, the background in some things. There's so much going on. If the whole serial took place in the ship, I'd probably be really happy.
It looks like organic stuff. It looks like skin, basically. You know, it looks like, you know, flabby skin, but, you know, skin nonetheless. And it's, the sound design in there is really good. I have to refer to my handy dandy Doctor Who guide to remember who did all the sound design, but the effects that they achieved with basically everything in the Axos ship, or Axon ship, is incredible. I think it's beautiful.
That big eye, the, like, camera, that was just, like, a big eye on, like, a stick that hung down. It was awful. It was great.
I know. That is so awesome, because, I mean, if you touch it, it looks like you just pull your hand away and go, ew. You know, it's just one of those things. I mean, it just has that kind of weird, organic, you know, sense to it, or, you know, look to it, that makes it look really, you know, as real as it can look.
There, and we said in, like, the last couple episodes how we've gotten into an era where they've just discovered blue screen and are very excited about it.
CSO is it's called. Color Separation Overlay.
God damn it.
What?
She hates that phrase so much.
He doesn't know.
You hate color separation overlay?
No, the very first episode that we had it, Joe just kept finding excuses to say color separation overlay to the point where it became a joke.
Ah, so if I keep saying color separation overlay.
Color separation overlay.
Yeah, it's a thing now.
So basically Joe and I could turn it into a song. Colorception overlay, colorception overlay. But yeah, it's, Barry Letts, totally. You know, he discovered basically, hey, you know what? We have this new technique where we can green screen, blue screen, yellow screen. I think most of it was yellow back in that day. Yeah, to create those kind of weird mixed effects.
I think this is the first time that they've used it effectively, which I hope is not, like, rude, but this is the first time where I'm like, yes, you figured it out, good. You know what you want to do with that now.
They fuck it up a little bit later, but sure.
Yeah, and there's still some, I mean, it's, you know, not 100% perfect. I mean, there's still a lot of, you know, fringing around the outlines of the humans and stuff like that. For what it was back in the day, and then, you know, for the technology that they had, because, you know, this is all analog stuff, and tight budgets, and tight times, and they're doing the best they can trying to create these, you know, weird atmospheric type of things. I mean, it doesn't really take off until you get to the Exelon City and Death to the Daleks, and you're like, oh, maybe they should try harder. Yeah, this is one of those stories that really kind of has a very definite look to it, that has, you know, a very consistent look to it, because everything in the Axon ship looks like it belongs, you know, I think they call it mise-en-scene or whatever. And then, you know, there's obviously everything in the laboratory and stuff like that, that, you know, just, it still all really kind of ties in very well.
Are we getting to the scene that makes me really sad yet?
I don't know, possibly.
Don't know what it is?
Well, the ship lands.
There's a character who suddenly appears.
We're about to get there. Yeah, so the ship lands. It sends out a distress call. So they're all going to go and check it out, except for Joe.
She's not allowed because she's a woman.
Exactly.
I don't know.
But she thinks she hears Bill, because Bill does get captured by the thing separately. He gets, like, sucked into the thing. Joe tries to go in again and is denied a second time. But she will not be denied a third time.
You were so upset.
A lot of people knock Joe for her being a screaming companion, but she learns and she figures out things on her own. But yeah, we meet a very familiar face when Bill Filer is captured in the Axon ship.
Made Tony so mad.
A face that has consequences for me.
Really?
We made a bet last episode. The Master was introduced two serials ago, right?
Yeah, Joe did not think he was going to be used again so quickly, and he was in the next episode that surprised him.
I was like, oh, he's already back in the second serial. So I was like, when do you think he'll be back? And Tony is like, I think they're at least going to give him a break and he'll be in this, not the next serial, but the serial after. I was like, I think he's going to be in the very next serial. The bet was whoever was wrong had to put Tony's laundry away.
Wow, dude, you guys got to raise your game.
You don't understand.
You don't understand.
Somebody should have at least gotten a dinner out of that. Jeez.
You don't understand how long I've not been putting my laundry away.
Oh, wow. Okay. Gotcha. Okay.
There's a basket that you can't see anymore because it's covered in clothes.
That's the closet. And here's my thinking process with this was, if Joe lost, he would put my laundry away. And if I lost, I could just keep not putting my laundry away. So it was really win-win for me.
Is this a bet that's going to stay, keep going on, or?
You have to at least put the current batch away.
The stuff on top of the pile, you mean?
The whole pile.
The stuff that's in the basket on top of the other clothes, I'll put that away.
You know what? At this point, I'll take it.
Dude, we just got so domestic in this up in here.
Point is, I won.
Dude, you put away the dishes.
Right, but you're going to have to rake the yard.
We live in an apartment. We don't have to deal with the yard, so that's good.
Or just do it out of the kindliness of your heart. So, but yes, the master is there.
Yay!
The master's there. Joe won the bet. I'm going to have to put at least some clothes away.
Also, they do like a dramatic zoom. He doesn't immediately reveal that he's the master, and Bill doesn't know who he is, despite having a big ass file on the master. And then he says that he's the master, and it does this extreme zoom in onto Bill's face, having no fucking reaction whatsoever. He's just like,
I don't know if he forgot that he was in the scene.
Well, who are you? I'm Bill Filer. I'm an American.
He's like the anti, like, Keanu Reeves. Like, he's got the same level of acting, but he's British being American instead of American being terribly British.
Oh, come on, man. Don't knock Keanu. I like Keanu Reeves.
Yeah, but have you seen Dracula?
Yes.
He is terrible in that movie.
Well, everybody's terrible in that movie.
That's true. It's a terrible movie.
So, except Gary Oldman. He's great in everything. Tony, if I were you, I mean, I would go ahead and just do this bet again. Seriously. Because, I mean, I can guarantee you in the next first episode of the next story you see, you will not see the master, so.
So double or nothing?
I would go double or nothing. I would go double or nothing.
So you're going to say that the master doesn't appear until the serial after the next one?
Yeah.
All I'm saying is she's, you know, life is about risk. But no, Colony in Space is the next one, so. But yeah, we're still on the Claws of Axos, with deeply embedded in the carcass of Earth.
That is a line that is actually said.
Well, I think what they're trying to do is they're trying to, like, match something like Inferno. You hear that? That's the planet screaming out its rage. You know, I think they're trying to come up with little iconic lines for stories like that.
Carcass of... It sounds like the Earth is dead, though.
Yeah, I was really concerned.
Well, I mean, at that point, they were, you know, figuring it was dead.
Alright, so after we meet the master, who is also captured by this ship, we meet some creepy-ass gold people.
Oh, who look amazing! They have ping pong balls for eyes, I'm pretty sure.
That are just spray-painted gold.
Everything, their whole faces are gold. They look like...
Marty Feldman?
Like Greek statues, if you spray-painted them gold. That's their aesthetic.
And they were Marty Feldman.
And also that. They look great.
They act really well, too. They're very...
Oh, they're very alien. The main one who does most of the talking is very sort of stilted. He has a little bit trouble sometimes, I think, looking in the right direction.
Because he probably can't see. Because
he has ping pong balls for eyes. But other than that, his acting is great.
Yes, that would be Bernard Hawley as the Axon male and the voice of the Axon. Pulling double duty.
Do they bounce back and forth between, like, Axos and Axon and Axons?
Axon, Axoff?
What's the terminology? Like, what's the exact terminology?
I'm gonna have to be honest and say I wasn't paying enough attention to say for certain.
I say we say Axons.
The people are Axons, the ship is Axos.
Okay.
Maybe?
The ship as, like, one being, which it is, spoilers.
But they are of Axos, so they are Axons.
So they are Axons. I'm fine with that.
Listeners at home, give us your answers on the back of a cardboard box.
And just ship it wherever you want. We'll find it.
To Joe and Tony of No Fixed Abode. And no yard to rake.
So they say that their ship needs nutrients, and they're going to suck up some nutrients. In exchange for this, here's some axonite, which is another word.
Yes, which will help solve your food problems.
All Everything. Of your problems. And to prove this, they make a frog really big.
He's like, you eat this, right?
No. In parts of Tennessee, maybe, but, you know, the legs.
Just the legs.
Imagine this is an apple, then.
How did they get the frog? Did, you know, like, one of them go out and it's like, ah, well, this'll work.
Just shot out its little tentacle thing.
Exactly. It's like, oh, look, a frog. Or a protein source.
One of Tony's favorite tropes, or things in general, is things out of scale. So, seeing this frog getting big and small do anything for you?
It's alright.
Fair enough.
Eh, you know.
It's not like...
I've seen both smaller and bigger.
I told you so. No.
It's not like when the Master shrunk that guy in the first...
No, it's not like that, which was one of my favorite things, and it's one of my favorite weapons.
Oh, Googe.
Googe! Love the Googe.
And the tissue compression eliminator.
I don't think it was named in that episode. It's just like he made somebody really small, and you're like, what's up with that? And it's like, don't worry about it.
I think he only used it in that one story, but by the time John Nathan Turner was in charge, it was in every story for Anthony Ainley when he took over as the Master. Sorry, spoilers.
Wait, there's more than one Master?
Kind of.
God damn it.
I hear he's a woman these days.
Wait, I had a dream last
night.
Wait,
are you telling me Missy is the Master?
Well, you know, she couldn't keep calling herself Master.
I had a dream last night that I was Missy and I got arrested. And that's all I remember. I just thought everyone should know.
That's an important part of this podcast.
The other thing that I remember is that it was delightfully fun.
Of course
to
it
be
would
here.
Be.
Of course. It's always fun playing the villain. The thing we're kind of glossing over here is that the Master has gotten captured by the Axons.
This is like the first time that he's not like had a plan.
It's like we actually just fast forward to his plot, like the end of it. He's already been like scheming. It's already turned on him. He already knows he's going to like team up with the Doctor and defeat the people that he was teamed up with. Because like we've done it so many times. It's like we're just going to skip to this bit.
Which is we've only had it done twice, but we know.
But we know.
Yeah, and it just shows, you know, the the Master, for all of his boasting, can also bumble around as well sometimes, you know, kind of, you know, how the Doctor can, unintended consequences of his actions sometimes. But yeah, it's interesting that, you know, the Master gets trapped trying to, you know, screw other people. Go figure.
That's sort of his shtick.
He hasn't had a single really good plan so far.
I don't know. I think the killing people with inflatable chairs was a great plan.
Yeah, we needed more of that for sure.
More inflatable chairs, man. We see all that in Moffat's era, too, of making normal household things scary. You know, the inflatable chairs, you know, the daffodils, you know, even police.
I think they've done a good enough job of that on their own.
All right.
Fuck the police. No, I'm sorry.
This podcast just got political. What?
Oh, no.
Oh, man. I gotta bust out some Public Enemy now.
Anyway.
They've got, hey, we got this Axonite. And Chin's like, I want some of that Axonite.
But
give me that Axonite.
But just for me, just for Britain. And they're like, no, you have to give it to everyone.
It's the secret ingredient in his chicken.
That's those seven original herbs and spices, right?
Yeah. And then Joe has snuck aboard the ship because she's gonna. Joe does what she wants.
Yeah, he can't tell her what to do.
Joe gonna Joe.
And then she sees something we actually saw a clip of at the beginning of this episode, which is these, like, worm dudes.
The flabby Axons with the tendrils and all that stuff.
I guess that's what they naturally look like, and they just adapted this gold person thing to not look
so
scary.
Creepy.
To not freak out the normals.
Yeah, a lot like in Galaxy Quest.
It's kind of a common sci-fi trope, too. You're kind of playing, you know, with, you know, these quote-unquote benevolent agents. Aliens. Good God. I tried to say agents and aliens at the same time, and it just came out so racist. Good God. Grandma, is that you? No. Benevolent aliens to come, you know, save us, you know, or save humanity through, you know, either, you know, providing food or whatever, some technology or stuff like that, with the flip around of, you know, it's actually, you know, we're gonna eat you, or, you know, this is how you blow up your own planet. You know, it's like, you know, those Twilight Zone episodes, like To Serve Man, stuff like that.
It's a cookbook.
But that's the cliffhanger, is Joe sees a wormy dude. And we're now into episode 2, which I have called Kill Bill.
Oh, nice. That one's all right.
Thank you.
I don't hate it.
Yeah, I actually learned that Kill Bill was actually the original, was the proposed title for Oxygen that aired a few weeks ago.
Oh, really?
Because Bill technically dies, or, you know, kind of dies, sort of. She not quite dead.
She got better.
She got better. It's just a flesh wound. It's just an oxygen deprivation.
Can we do an episode on oxygen? Can we just stop doing this now and start doing an episode about how great oxygen was? No? Okay.
I love Jamie Matheson. He's great.
I know we keep going off on tangents, and I'm sure the audience is really appreciating it, just because, you know, hey, you know, it's fun to talk about Doctor Who, honestly. But, yeah, this season has been probably my favorite, and it's topping season 9, which was my favorite, so. About the only weak one I've seen, I consider, is Knock Knock, so, but that's just me.
Same. The beginning's pretty good, then the resolution is kind of sloppy.
And the scariest part is realizing how long ago 20 years ago was.
Sister, don't even start. when I can measure my Doctor Who fandom in decades.
We've only been at it for maybe a decade.
It's getting to be too much.
Hey, Tony, we're almost 30.
It's time to switch to something else. Care Bears, no. We come in episode 2.
And we get that classic, this happened a lot, especially early in like the first Doctor run, and a little bit in the second, of someone says they saw something, generally the female companion, says they saw something, and everyone else goes, no, you didn't. Because Joe says, I saw this thing. And then everyone goes, no, you didn't. It's probably hallucination.
It's just a hallucination.
Doctor's like, even I have one. Because when he enters the ship, he gets, like, brain probed.
He gets attacked because, you know, he's not a human.
He's like, I saw some weird shit, too. You're not special.
I've seen some shit, Joe. You don't understand.
So, back to the Master and Bill. The Master give... No, Bill just has a gun, right? Because he's American.
Because he's American, yes. That should have been my first clue.
Yes, the best way out of any alien ship is to shoot your way out.
He is trying to shoot the titular claws of Axos that are grabbing him. I just wanted to say titular.
I know.
And,
Are you sure you don't mean eponymous?
Isn't that about a horse?
You're thinking equestrian, aren't you?
I thought that was, like, had something to do with the globe. Like, around the globe.
Anyway, back to Claws of Axos.
So, the Master says, don't shoot the claws, shoot this green dangly bit.
It's the nerve center or something like that.
It's its balls, probably.
Which he knows, but doesn't have a gun because he's not American.
He has, like, shrinky shit.
He's also not an Earthling. The Master does kind of have a, like, a little space gun.
He's got a laser gun.
That he kills a unit soldier with when he escapes.
Because he's bad. Now you know. We are filling you guys in on all the pertinent information.
For those who weren't aware, the Master is a bad, bad man. So bad.
The reabsorption happens.
No, one of the Axos people.
The gold ones.
Like, wants to get, like, reabsorbed back into the ship.
The ship is, like, start reabsorption, and they get reabsorbed back into the ship, which is portrayed by just one of them getting kind of fat and sticking to the wall of the ship.
And, of course, it has to be the woman who does it, so.
It was very goofy.
I can do that. Yeah. It's like, you know, it's like all of a sudden, I'm going to hold my breath till I turn gold.
But they've taken the Axonite.
Shin wants to keep it just for Britain.
But the Axos is like, it needs to spread worldwide. That's not sketchy.
That's not suspicious.
Come on, man. We got to do it worldwide. You got to help everybody out, man.
But Brig is like, no, and takes the Axonite away from Shin. But then Shin has everyone arrested.
Like, this happens a lot to UNIT. Where they're kind of like, we're in charge here, and everyone has to listen to us. And then all of a sudden, it's like, no, we're placing you under arrest. And it's like, where does UNIT fall in the chain of command here?
Well, UNIT is an international organization, so they, in theory, trump UK, you know, the United Kingdom.
But they have been placed under arrest, like,
multiple times.
Well, it's just to kind of show you, I guess, that, I don't know, UNIT's very bad at their job. I don't know.
That sounds about right.
I mean, they only have 3 soldiers, for Christ's sake. Yeah.
They have Brig,
Yates, Benton,
and the guy that carries the map. That's his sole job.
And a couple red shirts. Terry Walsh is one of the stuntmen in Doctor Who that you see him a lot. And he also doubles for John Pertwee in you know, stunt scenes. But yeah, I mean, it's like you see Terry Walsh and even his face screams red shirt. Every time you see him, he gets killed.
They're going to do
some tests. Yes. On the Axonite to see what it's made out of.
Which the Doctor says he wants to help out on, and so when Chin's...
Oh, it can't just make things big, by the way. It can also duplicate things.
When Chin's arresting everybody, the head scientist guy's like, okay, but don't arrest the Doctor, because we want to go play.
Oh, there's... when he gets introduced, the scientist, whose name I can't remember, did you say his name?
Winsor.
When he's introduced, and they're like, it's like, oh yeah, this is the Doctor, he's our scientific advisor, and like, this is Winsor, he's the head scientist. They, like, make eyes at each other, like, ah, you do the science! All right.
I also do the science.
You're someone I'm gonna need to talk to.
Let's do the science together.
Why don't you come over to my lab coat and make it comfy? I have no idea what that meant, but...
I was seduced.
Yeah, well, you know, danger. We're talking about the friction, kids. So, yeah, basically, the Doctor takes the Axonite and wants to use the particle accelerator that Windsor has. And of course, Windsor's not into that because, you know, it's his equipment and he probably has to bear the budget and repairs and all that stuff. So, and I'd be the same way if somebody wanted to use my multi-million-dollar particle accelerator.
Also, yeah. And I feel like this is important, it actually does turn out to be a really, really bad idea.
Kind of. The doctor does it and then it looks like when you put in dish soap instead of a washing machine soap in your dishwasher and all of a sudden all the bubbles come out. Yeah. Like you do.
Joe was so excited because he missed the foam.
I do. I did miss the foam. That was a big second Doctor villain, was just foam.
He's like, the foam's back!
It's like that episode of the Brady Bunch when Bobby decides to try to wash his own clothes and just destroys the house and everybody dies.
That was a very sad finale.
Surprisingly dark.
Yeah, they just completely ignored it for any subsequent episodes. But once again, okay, so the doctor's talking about what they can do with the Axonite and stuff, and once again he mentions that he has memory problems. That he's got memory blocks from the Time Lords. Which, that becomes a little more important later on in this serial.
Yes.
I don't know, I feel like they bring it up occasionally and then sort of like, oh yeah, also he has memory problems. I forgot.
Well, I mean, and that was the thing is, you know, at his trial in War Games, they took away his knowledge of the time codes, as you know, as it is called, I guess. But yeah, the doctor has lost the ability to travel because he doesn't know how to travel anymore. And,
to be fair, did he know how to in the first place?
Well, I mean, he could get off Earth and all that. So not to ruin anything, but you know, you can see in coming episodes how they get around this this block of the doctor being stuck on Earth.
Yeah, I've been reading like some like behind the scenes stuff and they were like, this will be great, this will be, we put it on Earth so it'll be cheaper and blah blah blah, and then all the writers were like,
but
oh, this sucks.
I understand, and it actually does. It brings all the horror home. These are things that come to Earth, or these are things that are on our own planet right now that, you know, can be dangerous to us. So it's, you know, instead of it being on, you know, some faraway planet or some space colony in the future, John Pertwee's, you know, always talks about, you know, coming home and finding a Yeti on your toilet. You know, it's okay if it's a space monster that's on a spaceship, but when it's a monster that is, you know, walking down the streets of a city, you know, and even looks like your city, then, you know, the terror is to be more immediate.
The Master is still trying to, like, talk his way out of being captured. He says that he wants the Doctor killed, which I don't believe.
He says he wants to kill the Doctor and all life on Earth, because it's going to go all the way.
The Master always seems to go, well, I'm the Doctor's best friend and his major adversary.
I don't think he actually wants the Doctor dead. Ever.
He almost did. He could have killed him in the last serial. The panic on his face when he realized that he had almost actually achieved it is there in that scene.
It's, you know, it's like the Batman and Joker, you know, it's you know, like in The Dark Knight where he says, you know, you complete me. There, yeah, you know, there is that relationship between the Master and the Doctor that had been not actively explored, but there's hints behind the scenes, and then as you go on in the series, you'll find out that, you know, more becomes clear and apparent as to what their relationship is, or what their relationship was supposed to be, and stuff like that.
Bill gets sent out. Bill's been mind controlled.
He's not been mind controlled, he's been duplicated.
He's been duplicated, yeah. And he's been sent out to bring everyone back to the ship.
They let the Master loose too, but they won't give him his TARDIS, but they do give him his laser gun.
That's what I like. The weapon will be permitted. It's like, wow.
We won't give you your car back, but here's your gun.
Ain't that America? No, sorry.
But also, the Doctor brings, because they've been trying to analyze the Axonite. The Doctor's been like, use the particle accelerator. Use the particle accelerator. It's not going to work. You examining it, it's not going to work.
Can you say particle?
Particle accelerator.
All right, just check.
And they do examine it. They can't figure anything out. He's like, because it doesn't want you to. It's smart. But he wants to bring in his TARDIS to analyze it himself with his TARDIS, which he does. He brings the TARDIS in, but I don't know if they do anything with it immediately.
Well, I know the Master tries to do it as well. Also wants to, you know, gets into the Doctor, actually breaks into the Doctor's TARDIS.
It's a mess.
Also, when the Master escapes the ship, he jumps on top of a moving truck at one point. It was really fun. Was it really him, too? Like, at least when it was, like, filming?
No.
Maybe not when he jumped on, but, like, when it cuts to on top of the roof and he's climbing across the roof of the truck, that's definitely him.
Well, yeah, but it's probably not going as fast So, look.
And he hypnotizes someone through the side view mirror.
He just stares at him and, I am the master. You will obey me. Come to Butthead.
Does he, is he reading his lips? Because I'm pretty sure he can't hear him. Because it's probably loud.
What?
It's just some psychic shit. Say it again.
You want to go to the doctor? All right.
Oblay? Oblay? What? Oblay knee? What? You'll oblay me? Who's this you'll oblay me?
I want to do that in an episode now. When I write for Doctor Who,
When you write for Doctor Who.
Yeah.
So yeah, he gets a unit soldier and promptly hypnotizes him, and then they break into the facility, and hilarity ensues.
Fake Bill shows up and tries to fight the doctor, or take the doctor.
But then Real Bill also shows up, and is like, it's an imposter! And then he kills one of them, and he's like, how do you know you killed the right one?
Well, Evil Bill gets foamed.
Yeah, he gets put into the accelerator.
He falls in the accelerator thing and then turns into foam.
Then Axon Bill Filer's performance is just as wooden as Real Bill Filer, so...
They did a good job of hiding the stunt double except for one shot.
One shot.
Where you're like, that's clearly another guy's face.
But it was still better than that time with William Hartnell and some other guy.
Are you talking about the chase? The robo-doctor?
Yes.
Oh, gosh, yes.
That was so
bad. There are times where William Hartnell is facing away from the character and the stunt double is facing the camera. Why did they do that?
Well, that was actually William Hartnell's stand-in as well, I think.
There was times that they didn't need to use
the stand-in. It was just the stand-in on screen.
William Hartnell was not present in the scene at all, and the stand-in was there.
Well, I mean, and that's kind of how they did it, yeah. They would have, you know, even in the first season, they were having people stand-in from William Hartnell. You know, Brian Proudfoot plays the Doctor in an exterior shot of him, like, walking down this road in the Reign of Terror.
Just don't do it when you can see his face.
Well, it's kind of like when you get to the planet, their 10th planet, and, you know, they just have, you know, basically the stand-in is just a guy who gets up out of a chair and goes, ah, and falls down.
Yeah. So, okay, wait, the Master's plan was to send a message to the UN through the unit guy he's controlled? I don't remember what message he sent.
He's trying to convince him to send the Axonite out to the whole world and not just Britain.
Yeah, he spills the beans, basically. He, you know, because Chin wants to keep it all to himself. You know, he wants it all for the UK. Getting the unit soldiers to message the United Nations and say, hey, we have Axonite, and none for you, nanny nanny boo boo, or whatever, screws that thing up. And let's not forget, Chin is also somebody who is, for all intents and purposes, incompetent. You know, there's the one scene where he's on the phone with the minister, and it kind of, you know, you get the Dudley Simpson score that sounds like the sad trombone. But yeah, it's like, you know, this is a bureaucrat who's, you know, it's your head on the block, not mine, guy, who, you know, basically is trying to save his job, save his career. It's like later in the scene when it gets found out that the message to the UN about the Axonite, the minister says, you know, well, you know, and even if this doesn't work, I have your resignation letter here for your signature. You know, basically, this is a guy trying to fight for his job, but doing it as incompetently as possible.
Yeah, he's basically the worst.
I think if you have Tim Pickett Smith as your henchman, times are tough. Not to say anything against Tim Pickett Smith, but he's the general who helps arrest British actor. He passed away recently, but he'll pop up a few more times in Doctor Who, and you know he's basically a very venerated British actor. Tim Pickett Smith, bless his soul. He's in V for Vendetta, Downton Abbey.
Ah,
do you see Downton Abbey?
No, I know of it. A lot of people buy it from me. I work at a Barnes & Noble.
Okay, I was a little confused.
I just have I set up a little table in like at back alleys and like, you want some Downton Abbey?
I see on the corner with a trench coat, hey, psst, psst, you want some Emmerdale? You want some Emmerdale? Downton Abbey?
It's badly bootlegged. I've like printed up the covers myself. They say Downtown Abbey.
Got some upstairs, downstairs, man. That shit'll fuck you up. I give you a taste. Rest is gonna cost you. Peddling British TV on the streets of, where do you guys live? That place.
The doctor is left alone in the lab and is like, hey, that thing that the scientist has told me not to do 5 times.
I'm gonna do it.
Cause I'm a Time Lord, damn it, and you don't tell me nothing.
So he puts the Axonite into the particle accelerator and time travels that shit, right?
Sets off the Axonite ahead of schedule.
The scientist comes back and is like, what the? I just told you not to do that. And then goes to, like, rushes to get it or something and gets shocked by the thing. Then does he turn into a goopy blanket?
Yeah, he turns into an axon slug or something.
It's a guy in a blanket.
It basically is, but it still is consistent with the look of the axons.
It's a creepy flesh-colored blanket with flesh bits on it. It's a big flesh blob that's just sort of moving towards you.
It's like if Clive Barker came up with Silly Putty. It'd be that.
So they're trying to get away from it, and they run into a worm axon. And that's the cliffhanger, which is the same cliffhanger as the first episode.
Kind of, sorta. Yeah, Joe and the doctor get captured by the axons.
And that's the end of episode two. We're now into episode three, which I've called Must Not Distribute.
And Joe gets old. That whole thing of just making her old is just kind of weird. Because, you know, it's like Joe's just staring off with a dumb look on her face.
Yeah, she is. No facial expression.
So I don't know if she's, like, under mind control by the axons or something like that, or...
That's how the cliffhanger is resolved, is the axons sort of circle around them, turn into gold people, and, like, kind of hypnotize them, and they walk out.
Like, as I say, you do.
Though, did they at any point before now show any hypnotization abilities?
No, but they've been hanging out with the master, so he probably showed him a few tricks.
We are the axons. You obey me. And then we get, you know, into the confrontation with the doctor and the axons, and you kind of have that nice little video effect. It's a two-camera mix. The axon male is, you know, his head is on the video screen, and it kind of turns, and then it switches back to, you know, him looking straight on. It's basically, you know, two-camera shot that's being mixed together. It's like he's in a swivel chair, and he turns, and they mix it.
I was so impressed by that. Because I'm such a big fan of any time they do anything weird. I don't know. It's like one thing to like sit there and be like, I know what they're doing, but also I'm just so excited that they sat down and was like, oh my gosh, what if we put two cameras on him and he just is like moving and like his head is like swiveling the whole time, and won't that be great? And they're right, it is.
It's a really neat effect. Simple that it is.
So where my title for this episode comes from is Bill is in a... He got hit by a tentacle. He didn't get taken away.
Oh, don't you hate when that happens?
Yeah. And he's in a coma, but he's like waking up or whatever, and he's just saying the most ridiculous shit.
Can't distribute. Can't let him go.
Must not distribute.
Increase Shatner effect. Ugh.
No one does that. That's the worst acting I've ever seen. It was awful.
So far as, you know, night terrors and stuff like that, it is probably the most coherent mumbling in the world.
And then Benton is talking to, he's in the lab talking to this character who we see from the back, whose shoulders are hunched, and he's some kind of general or something. It's clearly, it's 100% clearly the master.
Was it?
Yeah, yeah, I remember when we watched it and I went, I have That's no idea master. Who that could be.
Who is that? Seriously. I was fooled the first time I saw that. I mean, we're talking about, you know, he is the master. He's the master of disguise, you know, and he's able to, you know, impersonate usually a mid to late middle-aged man with a mustache and beard. Because, I mean, that's what he was in Terror of the Autons. It was, you know, like some sort of phone installer. Oh, yeah, don't worry here. Just putting in a new line for you, sir.
And that's the same thing in the last serial, too, The Mind of Evil. He was, like, working on some shit outside.
Yeah, I don't know what the master's deal is that he can't get a alias without facial hair, but there you go.
He just likes it.
It's not even important because he wears a mask. It's a mask. It's a plastic mask. I don't understand.
Maybe Benton has poor eyesight.
It's clearly the master. He goes into the TARDIS, and it's the first time we've been inside the TARDIS.
Since the War Games.
Yeah. I think Joe almost wept.
I did. I was very happy. And hearing that hum, I've missed that hum.
And the round things.
Oh, yeah, the round things. I love the round things. Love a good round thing. And he's just fucking about with the TARDIS.
The TARDIS is a mess. There's wires and stuff all over the console.
The master is very annoyed about it.
It's just been, like, pulled apart. Like, the doctor just has been sitting there being like, maybe if I do this, it'll fly again.
What? Oh, my God, the rubber band broke.
It feels smaller, though.
I think it might be.
Smaller on the inside.
Than it used to be. The doctor, like you said, was interrogated. The axons say they can remove his memory blocks if the doctor will give them time travel knowledge.
So he does.
And that they threaten him with aging Joe. And then he does. He's like, should I like write it down? They're like, just think it at us. We'll get it. So he goes, with his brain. Equations start flying past the screen.
I'd like to hear from somebody who knows about math, by the way, what those equations are, if they're just gobbledygook or if they are...
Oh, they're most assuredly gobbledygook.
You don't think they would at least, like, look up an equation?
I mean, they might have just, like, zoomed in on, like, math textbooks.
Well, the Oxford Dictionary says this is what an equation looks like. There has to have been some sort of, I don't know, maybe I'm assuming.
They did have a science technical advisor, at least during the early years, Kit Pedler, who created the Cybermen.
Co-created with Jerry Davis.
And then just ran that shit for all it was worth.
Well, and this is the first script from the Bristol Boys, as they're called. Dave Martin and Bob Baker. You'll hear more of them next season. They write a very well-known story that also features amorphous creatures as well, so.
I feel like writers have, like, their little quirks that they like and just keep using them.
Well, and they're also responsible for creating a Doctor Who companion as well that you will find out during the Fourth Doctor's era. As I like to say.
Or how would Pig Ben, what's his face say it?
Pig Ben Josh. Era. What? Oh, man. That hurts the back of my throat, man.
The brain equations say that they will need a lot of power, which they can get from the nearby Newton Power Complex, which they are going to plug into.
And it's going to take a lot of energy, because these things do.
There's one of them there at the plant hooking stuff up, and I think the brig sees them and starts chasing them, and then, like, you know, action scenes happen.
When did they stop being arrested?
At some point.
Yeah, they don't really ever stop being arrested. It just comes to a point where the Brigadier's on the phone with, what's his name? Is it General Harker or whatever? Tim Pigott Smith's character, whoever that is. He's like, you're under arrest. And the Brigadier's like, bitch, really? No, really? Seriously, that's adorable.
We were humoring you for a while, but we've got shit to do now, so.
You've had enough.
The brig is chasing this Axon. There's a unit guy running after him or something? I don't remember, but I do remember. The Axon shoots something at the unit guy, and the unit guy
just boom,
explodes. He explodes so hard he doesn't exist anymore, which is my favorite type of explosion.
And you have to think, the guy's like, oh shit, boom. That poor unit soldier, you know, just all of a sudden, poof. That's the thing I always think about, is, you know, you see these characters, you know, get killed and instantaneously, you know, get killed by like a blast, you know, like a, like from a tendril from an Axonite creature or, you know, disintegrated, you know, some other means. It's like, what goes through your mind? Probably not nothing and not for very much longer.
Just a tentacle. That's what goes through its head. It is very sad. I mean, that person had a family, probably.
You don't even have, like, the body, either, to be, like, give you closure.
Yeah, it's just gone. It's just gone.
Well, it's like in the Magician's Apprentice, when Missy kills the unit soldier, you know, and she's like, oh, he had a wedding ring, and oh, you know, a hint of, like, baby drool or spit up or something on him. You kind of, yeah, you get into that situation, it's like, well, wait a second, these are supposed to be, like, real soldiers who have, like, parents and friends and mortgages and bills and stuff, and it's like, all of a sudden, they're no longer there, man.
Messed up.
Word.
I'm sad now.
Have we made you too sad to carry on?
I can't do it.
It's okay, Joe. It's okay. Come on. He didn't really die, Joe.
Oh,
it's
okay.
Just a TV show.
It's pretend.
The brig catches the Master futzing around with the accelerator and the TARDIS.
The Master just pretty much talks his way out of it anyway.
He offers to help.
In exchange for his freedom.
The brig is like, hell no. And everyone's like, okay, do you have any better options? And he's like, fine.
Well, you know, I guess we can just blow up here.
So they're going to channel some power into the TARDIS, into the accelerator, into Axos. I don't entirely remember how this whole chain works, but it's going to kill it.
Too much power. So they're like taking the power from the thing. They're giving them all the power at once.
Trying to overload it because the Axon ship, you know, is expecting this amount of energy. And what they're giving is like, you know, the whole shebang.
But then the Axons are just like, well, we'll just give it all back.
That'll show them.
There's too much energy going back to the plant.
There's also like, there's like this sort of intense moment because while this is happening, the eyeball thing that's got been interrogating the Doctor is distracted with numbers. And so the Doctor just leaves, saves
Joe.
He just
walks away.
But, like, the Master is, like, doing this thing, and he's like, it's probably gonna kill the Doctor. And the brig's like, well, then don't do it. And he's like, I got no other choice. What do you want me to do? You want me to, you know, destroy the world or destroy Axos? And, like, the brig just turns away. Like, do what you're gonna do.
I know nothing. I can't shoot at it. I'm gonna go stand here in the corner and, you know, fantasize about executing Chin.
But, like, that's kinda harsh. Like, he's sort of like, yeah, do it. I know it's gonna kill the Doctor, but do it.
It seems like it troubled him a lot.
It should.
The Brigadier is generally always out of his element in these situations. You know, I don't say that just to be glib and funny, but this is a guy who just has, you know, his solution is just to blow up things or shoot things or lob a grenade at it. When it comes down to, you know, trying to figure out whether the Master is on the level with all this or whether the Master is doing this for some other means or whatever, you know, the Brigadier has no way of knowing. All he knows is the Master's in control. He doesn't want the Master to be controlled, you know, kill the Doctor, lose a vital ally and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, he does just kind of stares at the Master and then just kind of turns his head. And yeah, it's really funny. Well, not funny, but yeah, it's like, you know, well, nice try.
And that's basically the end of episode 3. We're now into episode 4, which I've called The Appetite of Axos.
All right.
So it starts off with, you know, the Doctor and Joe actually making it out of Axos.
After being, like, caught in the, like, Joe's caught in the goop.
Of the floor.
Of the floor.
The organic, like, gooey bits of the floor.
And, yeah, the ship, and then the ship tries to, you know, stop them by basically, you know, bamboozling Joe, which is pretty easy.
But then math to the rescue.
Math. It has its place in time. If you're ever stuck in an alien ship that's trying to take over your brain, just do some simple equations.
Two things about that. One, I'd have been screwed right there. They'd be like, quick, use your brain and do math. Nope, I'm dead. Two, I'm fairly certain he's like, what's 78 plus 10? And she says 108. Yeah. I'm absolutely certain that happens.
I think there's a bit where she adds 20 instead of 10, I think is what happened, yeah.
What's 37 plus 89? Jello. No, the Marquis de Sade.
I have a hard enough time just typing that shit into Google. I can't do it in my head.
I mean, you know, it keeps your mind young if you can do that stuff, you whippersnappers.
Is that what you do? Is that how you stay young?
Yeah, among other things.
How old are you, 23?
You're adorable.
Wait, I am.
I know how to flatter my guests.
I am taking a math class for exactly that reason.
To find out how old I am?
Yeah. It's real advanced math.
Brian Snape, how old is he?
They've got a lot of personal information on you. It's weird.
Yeah, I know, right? My name, soon my age, my passwords.
All of your fetishes.
All of them.
Oh my god. About 5 volumes of them. Later, that same kink. Anyway. So yeah, the Doctor and Joe get out, and I like that the Doctor kind of does this really dramatic leap out of the Axon, and Joe is just kind of running out, and she stops like, oh, should I fall down too?
I think she has to. Her dress is so short. She's not going to risk it again.
This is family tea time viewing. You can't see my knickers. Yes. But yeah, that was one thing I really liked is the Doctor just kind of does the, you know, the army leap out of the Axos and rolls, and Joe's just, you know, running plainly out like nothing's wrong as they extricate themselves from the sphincter of Axos.
Back in the lab, there's a character that we haven't mentioned, I don't think once, named Sir George.
It's his lab, too. It's his power plant.
Here's a character we forgot to talk about because he's kind of unimportant.
He doesn't do anything. It's fine.
Everybody leaves and he's going to turn off the thing.
Yeah.
Like, it's dangerous and he's going to do it alone.
Literally, I think this is the first thing he's done. He's like, it's my power plant. It's my responsibility. And I'm like, All right,
I don't know you.
Okay. Sure. Whatever. Okay. Yeah, let him have it.
Which he goes into the thing and he's like futzing with it. And then it literally like throws him out. He does like a flip over the
railing.
Yeah, the railing.
His sacrifice was not in vain, I guess. I don't know.
It was fun to watch.
And then the Axons attack, and they're all cramming into this, the laboratory or the particle accelerator room, and slowly, gradually moving towards our unit family.
Yates is also filming the anus at some point, so they can keep an eye on it.
A brown eye.
No, sir.
I forgot, is this a PG-rated podcast? No, we've already said the
F-bomb. Not anymore.
So at this point, they're all in the lab, and Joe and Bill are sort of flirting? I don't know.
We can't tell.
But also, Bill really mistrusts the Doctor and the Master.
Which is probably fair.
Because they're, like, doing stuff by themselves, and he's like, why do they have to do it alone? He's like, are they going to escape together in the TARDIS? And the Doctor is doing stuff that, like, thoroughly...
Very suspicious. He's being super shady.
You would think that the Master would have figured out by this point that maybe the Doctor lies? I want to get off this planet just as much as you do.
I don't think that was a lie.
Well, I mean, that's a lie, but the means of just, we'll destroy Earth and go off together.
What's really great is he's convinced the Master easily enough of, like, yeah, you know, fix my TARDIS and we'll go.
because he says, I've got this memory block, and we'll, together we can do this.
But he sets the TARDIS so that it takes him back to the ship. He's still pretending to be evil, though, but just, like, evil, and also he's betrayed the Master. Of, like, we're both Time Lords, and we want you to, like, take over the Time Lords. And, like, the Master's just, like, really bummed about it. He's like, I guess...
He's like, I got nothing.
He's like, I guess I'll just leave you to your new friendship that's not me. I thought we were gonna go on adventures and be evil together. I didn't know you... Alright, I'll just go back to my ship.
That has the sudden force field over it. I just like, you know, Roger Delgado just kind of, you know, he's walking plainly, and all of a sudden he just throws his hands up. That's a convincing force field.
He's so bummed, though, because for a little bit he thought he was going to have happy, fun, evil adventure times, and it was taken away from him.
The Doctor gives no clues to anyone, either, that this is part of a plan, either, because he just, like, turns to everybody before he gets in the TARDIS and, like, fuck all y'all guys. I kind of missed you, Joe. Bye! Peace out!
Screw you guys, I'm going home! I'm sure there may have been some people who watch that and go, oh, what's the Doctor doing? Is he really going to betray Earth? But, you know, deep down, it's like, you can see it, and you're like, for the story convenience, the Master doesn't see it, so.
I a little bit was like, I feel so betrayed. Like, I know what's going on, but I had a moment of, like, betrayal that I genuinely felt.
Two things I want to mention. One, the ship has starting to fly away.
It's pulling out.
Yes. And they tell Yates to pull out, too, because he's filming it. And they're like, pull out, Yates. Pull out of the anus.
Watch out for splashback.
And then there's also this completely kind of pointless scene of Benton and Unit attacking there's the worm people, like, attacking this Unit car. And they're, like, jumping all over it. And, like, Benton's running them over. And also, like, it's... I don't know. They cut to inside the car of, like, Benton driving it.
They forgot to do the CSO.
It's really bad.
It is. It's like, because, you know, they cut to, you know, the exterior shot, and, you know, it's a, you know, what, kind of a grayish sky. You get back into the cab of the van, and it's, you know, this kind of off dark blue thing. You know, and you see that earlier when Bill Filer is driving, you know, and he's got his Elvis sunglasses on. Look at me, I'm Bill Filer. I'm driving my car. I'm gonna listen to the Unit Wave Band.
I have a gun.
Don't you know, Doctor? You can't trust the Master.
But yeah, that scene, like, the stunt work was really good in that scene, but also it was just very distracting anytime they cut into the car.
It's almost as if they filmed it on a completely different set than... Like, they weren't actually outside when they filmed it.
My favorite thing about that is just watching people pretend to be in a car by bouncing up and down.
Well, there's usually some poor schmuck off camera shaking the car.
That's a little better.
There was that one scene where they came to a stop and it was like...
I have a gif of that.
Which you're going to have to cut out, because that does not work well for radio.
Listeners at home, what they did is they bowed forward and then came back really fast, as if being pulled by inertia and physics.
Thank you.
I also do descriptive video. Joe scratches his nose and puts his arm back on the shelf.
On a shelf?
I don't know.
I just take it up, put it on the shelf, so I can look at it later.
Tony laughs and goes, what have I married?
That's every day.
Tony weeps silently.
Okay, so yes, the Master wants his TARDIS, can't have it. The accelerator is activated. The Doctor connects Axos to the TARDIS, sets it to a time loop.
The Master discovers what's happening, which, how long did it take for him to figure it out? I mean, you know, basically, there's this, you know, little dot on the TARDIS monitor, which is now inset in one of the roundels of, you know, doing the figure eight.
Yeah. Oh, which is just blue. I was watching going, why is one of those? Oh, that's why it's blue. Right.
For the CSO.
That's how this works.
But the anus must take the load, right?
No.
No?
No.
I'm not even touching that. I am not touching Uranus, Comet. Or Uranus.
The thing gets stuck in a loop. The worms disappear?
They dissipate, yes, because they're caught in a time loop. Because, as the Doctor says, they wanted time travel, and now they have it.
Forever.
But the Doctor's stuck in it, too, and the worms are all, like, hugging him.
They're pushing his head down onto the council, and I don't like it.
That's like they want to try to keep the Doctor forever. 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 But somehow the Doctor is able, without the lack of time codes or anything whatsoever, ability to pilot his own ship, gets out of the time loop, just in time to arrive for the laboratory to explode. He lands, you know, comes out of the TARDIS, looks at the particle accelerator, and as he's going back, this whole, like, I guess ceiling falls on him or something like that, or nearly falls on him, and then, yeah, he gets back into the TARDIS, and then the Newton laboratory explodes real good.
Everybody's watching from distance. Joe's sad.
We don't have enough money to go to space, but we have plenty of money to blow shit up. That's all I'm saying.
Well, you know, models don't cost that much.
They go to the rubble, and the TARDIS does reappear, and the doctor comes out, and everybody's like, why the fuck were you an asshole? And he's like, eh.
And they're like, bitch, don't be fronting on me.
And then he explains the time loop really badly.
With fingers.
It's like, it's a loop. It's a time loop.
It's a loop with the fingers and with the the loop and the thing with, you know, and the thing. Because it's a loop.
Literally, the writer just said, because Doctor Who, that's why. Like, that's what the scene is.
It's a time loop. You know, it's a loop.
And then they're like, was the Master with them? He's like, I am 90% certain that the Master was with them. Pretty certain. Maybe.
There's a chance. Well, you know, I say a chance, but... at least 90%. But yeah, then, you know, the last line is, you know, the Time Lords forced him to go back to Earth, so he apparently is some kind of galactic yo-yo.
The Doctor definitely is a galactic yo-yo.
He will be for a while.
I just mean in general. He's a yo-yo.
He's a yo-yo. Oh.
Really? How dare you?
He's an idiot. Everybody knows that.
But this means we're getting off Earth for at least sometimes. I'm excited. I miss space.
I mean, the next one's Colony in Space, so...
yay, space! Let's go to space.
It takes place on a planet, not actually in space.
Bullshit.
Oh, the planet's in space.
Apologies for the spoilers.
Some lies and misdirection. But that's it. That's the end of The Claws of Axos. So
we sure did talk about it.
We put in a lot of time talking about it today.
What are the odds?
I give it an 8 out of 10. Honestly, I mean, it's a really good... the production design, you know, visually, it's a really good story. And the story, you know, could use some tweaking. We don't really need characters like Bill Filer. But, you know, overall, as a serial itself, it's very good. At the time, you know, addresses social issues like hunger and politics. Just overall, you know, I love the way the interior of the Axon ship looks. It's always been, it says it's an organic ship and it looks like an organic ship. It doesn't look like, you know, just bits of plywood, you know, taken together and stuff like that. It does wobble a bit, but, you know, organic wobbles. So, yeah, it's not my favorite, but it's definitely not one of the worst. But, yeah, it's definitely an 8 out of 10 for me.
I agree. I really enjoyed it. It's 4 parts, which means it doesn't drag as often. 6-parters or longer tend to drag, so I'm always a fan of a 4-parter. I love the design. You say the interior of the ship. I also like the exterior of the ship. Like, when you see it in full, it looks like a big something organic and floating in space. I mean, it looks like something that would fly in space, but it doesn't necessarily look like a spaceship, but in a good way. I like the Axons in both their shiny gold forms and their more wormy looking bits, which I feel like when they're in their worm thing, they reminded me a bit of the bad guys in Galaxy Quest.
Yeah.
You keep calling them worms, though. They're not worms. They're just kind of like these flabby pieces of flesh with tendrils.
Yeah, but they're wormy.
Tendrils.
They're wormy.
Wormy tendrils. Wormy tendrils.
I think that's a brand of cereal.
That's about to say.
Kellogg's Wormy Tendrils.
Great with meat milk.
A live frog in every box.
And it grows and shrinks. The things I didn't like were the way Joe was featured in this cereal. The way the doctor treated Joe in this cereal. But everything else was pretty good. And, you know, Bill was kind of me. All in all, it does a lot of weird shit. And anytime Doctor Who does weird shit, I am down for it.
When Doctor Who wants to break those sort of boundaries, yeah.
Anytime, like, I'm like, what is happening? And also, you know, Pig Ben Josh.
Pig Ben Josh. Rest his stinky soul.
His deflated soul.
From 19 UR to 19 UR.
Yeah, I think you guys mostly covered everything, but I cannot talk enough about how great the design of this episode was and how great the gold Axons looked and how great the ship looked. And just the general feel of everything. It was a good episode for really interesting designs. And it'd have been nice if Joe had more to do, but it was fun.
You were pointing at me like I needed more to do. I was like,
what haven't I done?
I mean, you haven't pulled your weight on this podcast, Joe. I'm just saying.
That's true. That's fair.
Tony and I are just kind of picking up your slack, so. We're talking despite you.
It's one, if I was, like, building a list, this is, like, what you need to check out in Classic Who, this would be on the list.
Except for Bill Filer. Screw him.
Screw that guy.
Before we go, anything you would like to plug, sir?
I am appearing in my kitchen later this evening. Limited opportunity, so, yeah. No, I have absolutely nothing to do. I have nothing to really promote, but if you're interested in any of this babbling that I've been doing and you enjoy it, I am on Twitter at Gonzaro, and that's basically it. I may be starting my own podcast at some point, a Doctor Who podcast, but it's early days yet, so we don't know.
I know you used to do a Doctor Who podcast. Is that still available anywhere?
Not at all. Unfortunately, I lost the... I don't have the files. The podcast was called This Whovian Life. It was kind of a take on This American Life, but it's basically, you know, was me and a mutual friend of Joe's and ours just talking about Doctor Who, and then it went to the wayside, and then I have moved quite a bit since then, have changed computers and stuff like that, so... Unfortunately, I don't have any of the original files for that, but like I said, I'm hopefully maybe getting back into the podcast thing.
Cool. Well, we are easing you into it.
This was a nice little break back into it.
And let us know and we'll promote it to all, you know, 30 of our people.
Well, the 10 people who followed this Whovian Life probably will enjoy that as well.
If you like this episode, check out more on WatchYourAssalon.com. Be sure to rate and comment on our iTunes. It would be really nice if you did that, you guys.
Yeah, please. We've had a couple of reviews, and it's been awesome. And thank you, and you're the best.
We have now amassed enough reviews to actually get a star rating. We have 5 stars. Woo!
Congratulations.
From 6 ratings. But if you'd like to help us out even more, you can go to WatchYourAssalon.com/support. And there you will find a link to our Patreon page, which you can get to just by going to patreon.com/watchathon. There you can donate a monthly amount to get all kinds of rewards, like videos of us watching the episodes, day early episodes, and uncut video of the podcast records, where you can see me scratching my nose and not have to have it described to you by Gons. Also on our support page is a link to our Amazon wishlist, where you can sponsor an episode of the podcast by purchasing the corresponding serial on DVD for us. We'll mention you in the podcast and put your name on our Friends of Rassilon page. Speaking of, special thanks again to Matt Golden for sponsoring this episode.
Hey, thanks, Matt.
You can follow him on Tumblr at mgoldentumbles.tumblr.com.
Thank you, Matt.
And tune in next time when we talk about Colony in Space. Space. Space.
Space. Space. Space. On a planet. 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 Planet.
Bye, you guys.
Night. See ya.
Keep calm and Rassilon.
Bye. I love you. You're my favorite out of all of our listeners. Don't tell the others.
I just want to be friends.
Hi, this is Siri. I would never, never ever listen to the Earth Station 1 podcast. Who the heck says howdy anyway? Why don't you listen to Chris Hardwick instead? I can get you his information. The Nerdist is everywhere anyway, haha. That was a joke. The Earth Station 1 podcast. It's time to let your inner geek out to play. You can find them at www.earthstation1.com or up on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or wherever fine podcasts are found. Peace, and we're done.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.